I'll be a friend to Jesus. We're going to study in just a moment one little girl who did not yet know Jesus. Several hundred years in the future before Jesus would come, but the kind of influence that she exhibited was the kind that Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount, where we read a moment ago about our light, our influence, our example, and so much so to glorify the Father who is in heaven. And so this morning we're going to study about the influence of one little girl. 2 Kings chapter 5 is our text. I hope you'll go ahead and be turning there. 2 Kings chapter 5 verses 1 through 17 is the bulk of our text. And typically when we look at this particular passage, we look at it in light of Naaman. Naaman, who is captain of the army of Syria. And so we usually study that. In fact, in verse 1, that's how it begins. Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor. And then almost stuck in there in the midst of that, but he was a leper. And we spend a great deal of time typically using Naaman as a great example as well. And we learn some valuable lessons. And we can talk about that along the way. But the one who shows up a little bit later in the next couple of verses, the Syrians, verse 2, had gone out on raids and had brought back captive a young girl, the King James says a little maid, from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. That's the little girl that we're talking about this morning. Now, in the background of this period, this is a time in which you have the divided kingdom, and so you have the kingdoms of the south, the kingdom of Judah, and then you have the kingdoms of the north, or the kingdom of Samaria, or typically referred to as the kingdom of Israel, those 10 tribes that were up north, and those kings which were in fact evil, every single one of them as you walk down that line. The one who was reigning at this point in time was Jehoram, as he's typically seen, and he is the son of Ahab. We know something of Ahab and Jezebel. And so those names ring a bell to us. And so this is the time frame that we're talking about. The Arameans is who, when you read of Syria here, some translations will read of Aramea. And you have King Ben-Hadad II, who is king during that time. And obviously there are a lot of scuffles and raids that were taking place. There's some fighting that's taking place. And so territory that's trying to be taken over by this one and that one. And so this is what's going on in the background of this time frame. And during one of these raids, this little maid was taken. This young girl, this little girl was taken and brought back. And now she is serving Naaman's wife. So she's serving in their home. Now, the information that we have on this little maid is very limited. There's no name given. There's no definite age given. She may or may not have originally resided maybe in or near Samaria, in that area, Samaria being the capital of Israel, the northern kingdom at that point in time. And so, but she does certainly know something about Samaria. She is familiar also with the prophet Elisha, we're going to find out. And so that's important, but see, she knows something about that. She knows how God is working in the land, even amongst all of this that is going on at this point in time. She's taken captive by the Syrians, and now, as we know, serving Naaman's wife. Though little is said, especially in the King James, about her physically, there's a great deal that we can determine about her spiritually speaking. And her influence even lives on today. What can we determine then about the influence of one little girl? What lessons can we glean from this one little girl? This is rather an obscure passage, if you will, because again, we usually study this in light of Naaman. And we talk about the young maid who's going to give some great advice, and then Naaman's going to go into the prophet Elisha, and then he's going to be healed of his leprosy. Now that's generally what we talk about, and we talk about the fact that it took him following that plan that was given by the prophet for him to be cleansed. And we talk about the obedient faith in following that particular plan. But this little girl that is there, the influence that she wielded at that point in time. Now let's notice something about her. In the first place, she felt compassion for others. That her influence, long before she said what she said, we know that she felt compassionate for this family. She's serving Naaman's wife. She obviously has a love for her, but you have to remember this is the enemy. Ultimately, she's been taken captive. This is the enemy. If we think about passages like Romans chapter 12. Let's just keep your place here, but jump over with me to Romans chapter 12 for just a moment. It's a valuable lesson we learn here. In Romans chapter 12, the Apostle Paul writes, "Repay no one evil for evil." Now, she's been taken captive. She's been taken from her family, taken from her home. Evil has been committed against her in that way. And God says, repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. And if it's possible, as much as depends on you, and so as much as in you, as you have the ability to do so, the things that you can control, in other words, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place for wrath. It is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says Jehovah. And therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him drink, for in so doing you will heap coals of fire upon his head. And be not overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. This is exactly what this little girl is doing. She's overcoming evil with good. Her service to this family is exemplary. What she is doing, but look at the compassion that she has. Let's continue to read a little bit more in this passage and we find out exactly how compassionate she truly is. She says to her mistress, if only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, he would heal him of his leprosy. Her words are short, sweet, to the tune. But she says, if Naaman, my master, whom I serve, if he could just go and be with the prophet Elisha, if he could just go and spend some time with him, he would know. He would have that salvation. He could be cleansed. Alongside of her compassion for others, even those who would be considered her enemies. We're talking about the Gentiles, right? The Syrians. The capital of Damascus, north of Jerusalem, several days' travel. And in that, now we're talking about Syria, not Assyria. Tonight we'll talk about Assyria when we look at Jonah. Two different people, but Gentiles nonetheless. But these are Gentiles. She's a Jewish maid. But look at the compassion. But alongside of her compassion is her faith. Look at what she knows to be the case. Look, if my master, if he could just go over to Samaria and visit with Elisha, the prophet of God, he would be healed. Look how powerful her faith is. She knows this to be the case. She's not saying, well, you know, it's possible. If he could just go over and visit, you know, maybe something would happen and, you know, maybe things would work out. No, she knows. If he would go over there, he'd be healed. That's what she knows. Look at her faith. So that alongside of her compassion. And we think about compassion for just a moment. To have pity, to be full of pity, a feeling of distress that is brought on by the ills or the wants or the needs of others. She is feeling, no doubt, what Naaman is feeling, her compassion. She is feeling what Naaman's wife is feeling, no doubt, living with a man who has leprosy, to suffer alongside of another willingly. That's compassion. Hebrews 4 and verse 15. The Hebrews writer speaks of Jesus and he says, "We have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, and yet without sin." He was touched with the feelings that each of us have. Compassion. That's what's being talked about here. That's not the only place we read in Romans 9 and verse 15. "For he has said to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion upon whom I will have compassion." Romans 9 and verse 15, Paul records. And of course, this is from the Old Testament. Christ demonstrated that kind of compassion. Matthew 9, 36. "When he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted, and they were scattered abroad like sheep having no shepherd." He had compassion on them. He was feeling what they were feeling. Their distress. Their being scattered about. Mark 1 verse 41. Jesus, moved with compassion, put forth his hand and touched him and said to him, "I will, be thou clean." He touched a man who has not been touched because of his leprosy. He was moved with compassion, felt what he was feeling, his distress, his illness, and the effects of that that it has throughout that home. She was feeling that as well, as if she's a member of that house, and ultimately she was. And so we see that she felt compassion for others. She sees, number two, she seized an opportunity. She didn't just sit back and say, "Well, you know, I feel bad for him. I feel sorry. My heart hurts when I see what he's going through. My heart aches when I see how she is feeling for her husband. My heart hurts being in this home." But then she just does nothing, right? She just keeps that all bottled up inside. She just keeps that all to herself. She never says anything, never does anything to be helpful in that situation. And yet still feeling that? No. You see, that compassion led to her seizing that opportunity. There was an opportunity here. Far from home, removed from family and friends, serving a foreign leader's wife, and yet she turns this negative into now a positive. She's made lemonade out of the lemons that have been given to her. She's an optimist, you might say. An optimist sees an opportunity in every calamity. And while a pessimist sees a calamity in every opportunity. What are we? Have you ever thought about that? Sometimes we'll joke about it. We don't have to be that way. I don't know, maybe that's the way that we typically, you know, I'm a pessimist at heart. You know, maybe we don't say that, but maybe somebody else says that about, well, man, they're so pessimistic. So negative about everything, right? But you know, we don't have to be that way. Because if we truly have faith and have compassion for others and feel what they're feeling and then seize the opportunities that are given to us. Now see, that's taking a situation that is bad and seeing that opportunity. That's an optimist. What do you see? Ever so slightly, in that word, opportunity, right? She sees the opportunity. Optimism is the determination to see more in something than there is. they're able to see something bigger, something greater, and a benefit that could come from seizing the opportunity. You can talk about somebody like Joseph, about David. David, who's constantly running from for his life because Saul wants to kill him. He's jealous of him. David is anointed king. Takes opportunity to serve, but realizes how those blessings have come about and does it right. Seizes those opportunities. The Apostle Paul. Now think about the greatest missionary, right, who's ever lived. She seized an opportunity. Number three, she demonstrated a sizable faith. I've already mentioned about her faith, but see, when you look at verse 3, you have to clue in on that because, you know, her saying something here, it'd probably get her in a lot of trouble. Who are you to even come to me and say any of this? Maybe that situation was not really present in that home. We're just not told. We're not given those details. But what we do know is that typically a young maid that was taken, now in service, enslaved in that home, she's serving this family. She's serving Naaman's wife. She doesn't really have a life of her own. Her life is serving Naaman's wife. But she seized the opportunity, and in that we see a sizable faith. And it's amazing, again, because maybe she's from Samaria, as we mentioned, capital city of the northern tribes at that time. They did not really have a reputation of being faithful, of really being God-fearing, that is, Jehovah-fearing. Now, they got into Baal worship and idol worship and all of those things, and they changed the worship and the place of worship and the time of worship of the one true living God. And you can kind of compare John chapter 4 when Jesus meets that Samaritan woman at the well and look at that background to kind of see some of those things. And so her saying anything here demonstrates a sizable faith. And so even though few around her are being faithful, her trust in God is evident. Let's look at the last grouping of verses here. Long reading, but let's see what happens here. Beginning in verse 4. Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus said the girl who is from the land of Israel." The king of Syria said, "Go now, I will send a letter to the king of Israel." And so he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, 10 changings of clothing. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which now says, "Now be advised, when this letter comes to you, that I have sent Naaman my servant to you, that you may heal him of his leprosy." Let's see, somewhere lost in translation was, it wasn't the king that could do this work. It wasn't the king who could heal him. And it happened when the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and he says, "Am I God to kill and to make alive that this man sends to me to heal him of his leprosy? Please consider how he seeks a quarrel. He's seeking war with me because of what he's trying to do here." And so it was when Elisha, the man of God, here's the prophet, he heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he says to the king, "Why have you torn your clothes? Let him come to me and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." He'll know it. He'll be assured of it. There will be evidence of it. There will be no doubt. The faith that this little maid has, that this little girl has, he'll have it. He'll have all the evidence in front of him so he can make that determination as well. Have that kind of faith. Let's read on. So Naaman went with his horses and his chariot, and he stood still at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean." Seems simple enough, right? But Naaman became furious, went away and said, "Indeed, I said to myself, he'll surely come out to me. Behold, I thought, he will come out to me And he will stand here, he will call on the name of the Lord his God, and he'll wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. I wonder, has he seen some of the modern day supposed faith healers that we have today? It's just how they act, right? They're going to shout and carry on and call out to the name of their God, and they're going to wave a hand over the spot right here and look at the healing that's taking place. That's what they'll do. This is how he had it in his mind. He had it pictured a certain way, right? How often is it that we approach God the same way? We have it made up in our minds. This is what I want. This is what I expect. This is how I see it playing out. Now, God, if you'll just do it that way, I'll be able to recognize it. We'll be good. Well, that's kind of what we expect. That's rarely how it happens, right? We should learn that lesson. I mean, because over and over, that's not how it's laid out. And so much so, I think, so that we will eventually learn that lesson. Let's continue to read. Naaman became furious in this. We see in verse 11. And so he says in verse 12, are not Abana and Pharpar rivers of Damascus? What does he know? He knows the rivers of Syria, right? The rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel. I mean, the Jordan is a fast-flowing downhill river that, man, it eats up and it churns and it gets muddy. And can I not wash in them and be clean? And so he turned away and went away in rage. His servants came near. He has an entourage. His servants come and they says, my father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more when he says to you, very simply, wash and be clean. And so he went down, dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his aides, and he came and he stood before him and he said, indeed, now I know there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Now therefore, please take a gift from your servant. He's learned a couple of things here. He's learned, number one, how to be humbled. But also, he's also learned how he now is a servant, right? He is wanting to serve God. He says, these gods of the Syrians, same as the God of the Egyptians, same as the gods of these other nations about, they are nothing. That's essentially what he said. They're nothing. But the God of Israel, now he knows something of him. And as the Lord lives, verse 16, before whom I stand, I will receive nothing. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. That is, Elisha refused. And so Naaman said, then if not, please let your servant be given 2 mule loads of earth for your servant. For your servant will no longer offer either burnt offering or sacrifice to other gods but to Jehovah. Powerful, powerful, wonderful lesson that just looking at Naaman, looking at his change, looking at the fact that he's clean, looking at his obedient faith, but thinking about where this all started. He would know nothing without this little maid who come to him in an evil way, serving in his house to his wife in an evil way because she's been taken captive. She's been stolen away and trafficked now, brought back to his country. And now he says, I know better. The God of Israel, I will serve. I will never again serve any of these other supposed gods. They're nothing. But this all began with the influence of this one little girl. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12, the Apostle Paul reminds the young man Timothy, let no man despise your youth. Be an example of the believers in word, in your manner of life, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. And in all those things, she has exhibited just that. She influenced Naaman's wife. She influenced Naaman. She influences the king of Syria. She influences the king of Israel, as he no doubt hears about it as well. She influences, in many ways, the God of heaven to act upon this man through the prophet Elijah. It's an amazing story, the influence of one little girl. She's only a little servant, and yet they acted promptly to her suggestion. Isn't that amazing? I don't know if you picked up on that. They didn't waste any time, did they? It tells us something about how desperate his situation was. They didn't waste any time following her suggestion. We often hear young people, the church of tomorrow, maybe the leaders of the church tomorrow, but they're the church right now. And the example and influence, young people, that you are, that you have on others around you, is powerful. What an opportunity that you have to show your sizable faith, to show the faith that you are growing in, and to help others see the Lord, see the power of God, change lives. You can do that. And I know you can. I want to tell you a little story about a small congregation, the Lord's Church. Currently, it's about 25 members. It's always been a rather small congregation in a little small town. Not much industry there, not much to keep people there. So when they graduate, most people just leave. Years ago, a little girl invited another little girl, her classmate, to Vacation Bible School. And she loved it. She had a good time. She invited her to Bible classes and to worship, and she came. Eventually, she influencing her family to come with her, to come and see what's going on at this place. They see her interest, her love for the Lord starting to grow. And that opens the heart of her dad, who has been a wayward member of the church for years, since he was a young man. He comes back to the Lord. That man's now serving as one of the elders in this congregation. That's not the whole story. You see, this young lady, when she's now growing up in high school, she starts dating a young man. She begins to teach him the gospel. He's coming over and visiting in their home and hearing the gospel and having Bible studies and coming back home at night and telling his family. You wouldn't believe what they're saying. Let's get our Bibles out. We've got to prove them wrong. Surely there's something in the Bible that I can take back to them that they just can't answer, right? But only to the point that they begin to teach themselves what they're saying is true. And this family then, that son obeys the gospel. Family soon follows. Husband and wife, two younger sisters of this brother. The younger of those sisters, she meets a young, energetic young guy who doesn't have much knowledge about God whatsoever. Most of his friends thought him to be an atheist. In fact, it wasn't the case. I know him personally, by the way, standing before you right now, preaching to you. The story doesn't end there. Numerous men who are serving as leaders in the church, as elders, four gospel preachers that I know of for sure that I can think of. And think about the influence that they have had upon others. Mission trips that they've gone around the world to preach the gospel. Congregations for which they have worked and preached sermon after sermon and influencing others around them. And then that influence spreading far and wide. One little girl. The influence of one little girl. I don't know that first little girl I was mentioning. I've never met her. But I am thankful for her. And thankful that as a first generation Christian, I get to teach, have been able to teach my boys, and they'll teach theirs, and their influence by way of our own family. That's huge. The influence of one little girl. I know sometimes our young people, we have 5 high schools in the county. Our young people are spread out across numerous schools, and some are homeschooled, some are in school. And so they're all spread out, seemingly. But we want them to know that they too, with their faith, they can be like this little girl and talk about the Lord. They can be like this little girl and invite people to services and help change lives through the power of God, through the gospel of Jesus Christ. But each one of us can do that. This year we've been talking about reaching out. Summer Bible school is upcoming, and we're reaching out. We've got cards back there to distribute to a whole community who needs to hear the gospel, who needs the influence of just one of us. Just one. Will that be you? I pray it will. I pray that somewhere generations away, the Lord has not returned, that there will be a story that is told in a family setting, saying, let me tell you about one person. This one person who affected my life. It was generations ago, but this is how the story went. They get to tell that. How amazing that is to see the power of God work in lives. To see that. And you can affect others just like this one little girl. See her sizable faith. See her compassion. See her move toward that opportunity. And you can do the very same thing. Maybe this morning there's one who needs to obey the gospel. Because they believe Jesus to be the Son of God. Realizing that He has died and that He shed His blood for them. As we've just remembered in the taking of the Lord's Supper. They're ready to confess that. Repent of sin. Be baptized to wash away their sins. If that's you, if that's where you are in the story this morning, don't delay. Don't put off what needs to be done right now. And if you're one who is wavering and doubting, slipping in your faith, you've let things drift, Hebrews 2 verse 3, you've let things be neglected, you can repent. Ask God to forgive you. You allowed sin to come into your life, you can repent of those things. And we will help and encourage you every way that we know how. We'll stand right beside you. We will be an influence, an example, one for another. All the way to heaven. That's our goal, to help. And to encourage and to love. And to show that compassion to you this morning. So if you have a need, come to the front while we stand, while we sing.